to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Radio Psy Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Psy, and with me is Arvind. And we're here to take you through the next few episodes of the things that happened in East Africa during Swami's visit in the year 1968. As we've been seeing in the past couple of weeks, Swami is, in a sense, truly enjoying his journey in East Africa because he has already decided to extend his stay. We were speaking about how Swami was to return before the Guru Purnima day ends to India, but Swami has already decided to extend his day. And more than Swami, the people over there are extremely happy with Swami's presence. And we can see that as the days progress, the way they are emotionally bonding with Swami is what Professor Kasturi writes about. But before we go into all of that, to remind you, we are on the 9th of July. We have completed the 7th and 8th. The two discourses that Swami gave on those 2 days is what we spoke about last week. The first discourse was on the 7th evening and the second was on the 8th evening. So to continue with what Swami was up to in East Africa in 1968, I invite Arvind to join all of us. Salam, Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and always let's begin by offering our humble and grateful salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet for this wonderful opportunity to sit calmly in this beautiful environment and think of him, speak of him, hear of him, feel him. It's indeed a blessing and we must count it every day of our lives. So as you said, you know, Prem, we are at the 9th of July. It was a Tuesday. Bhagwan was at Kampala. The previous 2 days, on the 8th and 7th, he had delivered discourses at the Patidar Bungalow, Patidar building, where thousands had gathered, Indians and Africans alike. And the 9th of July is one day before Guru Purnima. It was a kind of a tense day, if I may say so, because it had not yet been officially announced that Bhagwan would not be leaving on the Guru Purnima day. But Swami seemed to be softening, and he seemed to be agreeable to spending Guru Purnima there. What the people had all thought was Swami would be there in the morning for Guru Purnima, and the same day, that is the 10th of July, evening he would start back, evening or afternoon after the morning celebrations.
The plan was to start around 10 o'clock in the morning on Guru Purnima day, so that Swami reaches the airport and the same journey back.
Back, and so around 9 o'clock right. At night he'll be in Bombay.
Right. Sometime in the night he'll be in Bombay.
Yeah, the original plan, as Kasturi Garu pens it, 9:45 p.m., people in India can have darshan of their guru, while in the morning, 9:45 a.m., the people in Africa
just
will be having darshan.
You really have the Purnima. At night, people in Bombay also would be able to have Swami darshan.
Exactly. So that was the original plan. So 9th July in that sense was a kind of a, you know, tense day, because they knew for sure that Swami is there with them, their guru is with there, is there with them on Guru Purnima, but they weren't sure as to when he would leave, what would happen. So it was still going on and they were trying to pray. You know, Kasturi Garu writes of so many people holding up placards, making prayers to Swami, saying, "Father, don't leave us, Father, don't leave us." As we had discussed earlier, it was a Christian majority country and it is natural that they were referring to their Supreme as Father. Right. So they were all praying to Swami saying, "Father, don't leave us." On the 9th of July at Kampala, because it had become evident that Swami would be leaving in a day possibly, devotees from all the towns, Nairobi, that's in Kenya, Jinja, Eldore, Bale, Tororo, Nakuru, I don't know if I'm pronouncing these right, and if there are any of our listeners who know that I'm pronouncing, who are sure that I'm pronouncing it wrong, please forgive me for that. They were devotees from all these towns who gathered and sought advice and guidance from Swami. They were wanting to utilize this magnificent blessing that Swami had conferred on the African continent, and they did not want that visit to end with Swami's departure. They wanted it to be the beginning of a revolution, a Sai revolution that would begin in Africa. So they wanted advice from Swami on how to, you know, carry about seva activities, service, after Swami physically leaves Africa also. And Bhagwan was very, very happy with this, because, you know, when you come forward with such an initiative, it is very clear that you have a passion for Swami, you have enthusiasm for Swami, you have love for Swami, and love which translates into action. And I think this is something that we see in Swami in all stages of his life, in all his visits. He's always pleased when the blessing and grace that he confers translates into something tangible and permanent, rather than it being just a momentary or a day or a week's inspiration and energy after which it fizzles out. He is always thrilled by perseverance. And it is not just the case with the Satya Sai, right? The Sai Avatar has always emphasized on this, because Shirdi Baba, along with emphasizing on Shraddha, which is faith, he gave equal importance to Saburi, which is perseverance. Because faith without perseverance doesn't achieve much. And therefore, Swami was very pleased, and he met with this group and he advised them elaborately on how to go about forming a single Satya Sai Samiti for the entire East Africa. You know, it's very nice. He didn't ask for separate samitis to start off in different countries. And see, that is the first way we think of. Swami said, no, have just one samiti for the entire East Africa, and have the headquarters at Kampala, because Swami did not say it, but I'm just assuming that it would be because that is where Swami spent most of his physical time at East Africa, at Kampala. And therefore he wanted the Satya Sai Samiti for East Africa having its headquarters at Kampala. And then he said, you can branch out to Kenya, Tanzania, and more and more and more. What is interesting to note is Swami gave one dictum. He said, this is inviolable. You can't violate this. And what is that? Everything that the Satya Sai Samiti does must be free, absolutely free. There should be no money or cost involved anywhere. He said that, I am not insisting on what should be done as seva. I am just insisting that whatever is done, it should be done free. So he was saying, it can be a lawyer giving his services, it can be a doctor rendering his services, whatever. But whatever services is rendered in the name of Satya Sai, it has to be absolutely free. Nobody should be asked money for. There should be no money collecting of any sort. It should just be a transformation of the heart leading to a transfer of love between everyone. This is a very, very important and inviolable tenet that Swami laid down. And I say this because this is the tenet that Swami has given to different people at different points in time, whether they are starting the organization in America, in Russia, in Australia, in South Africa, in the Middle East, anywhere. This is the tenet that can't be violated, and it continues even to this day.
And you know, the interesting thing was, when we started speaking about the Africa trip, we mentioned about the world conference in Dharmakshetra, and where Dr. Patel actually had spoken, and each one was supposed to give a report of what they've been doing. And Dr. Patel says that, Swami, we're not doing anything, we're just doing bhajans, we love you a lot, please come to Africa. Right? Because they were really not doing much in Africa. And the kind of suggestions that Swami was giving was so very beautiful and so pertinent to the, you know, African continent, or the place where they were, East Africa. You know, things like, probably we would not have heard Swami saying to, let's say, Samiti members in Madras or Bombay or Bangalore, things like, help them with legal counsel, which was a very interesting thing that Swami was saying. That, because I think in a way, most of these people who are gathering at Swami's feet are predominantly the educated people who are from India, most of them. And they were all doctors, lawyers, businessmen. So Swami is saying that, can you do something by which you offer the illiterate people of Africa things which they are not having access to right now? Because doctors and medical camps are something which we know, but a suggestion which Swami is making is, can you help them with legal matters? Can you help them with business transactions? You know,
Swami, and I think at that point in time it would have been very important, because these were fledgling nations.
Exactly.
Things were coming up, things were not yet fully clear. So, you know, even in these times when things are very clear, legal tangles are so terrible and none of us would like to get into it. So when things are not clear, legal matters would have been really a headache for those who don't have access to it.
Especially illiterate And we know that, I mean, we sometimes see that even in the villages around Puttaparthi, you know, where for generations they are unlettered. Some of these things can be a real burden for them. So Swami is saying that there are so many small things that you can do. Probably Swami is saying that you should have been doing this already, but since you're not there. And Swami is using this momentum that has been created, as you're saying, that it's easy to find devotion when you are in the presence of Swami or when you've had such an overwhelming experience. But Swami is giving ways by which, in a sustained manner, you can bring out this devotion from within and through these activities. And it just reminds me of what Arvind Sai, one of our colleagues in Radio Sai, says, that he's part of that Burakatha team which had a lot of grace from Swami in those times when they were performing. On one occasion, these boys expressed to Swami in the TV room, "Swami, you're giving us so much. We don't know how we are going to repay this grace and blessings that we're getting from you.
Okay.
Right? So much you're showering on us." And Swami said something which was so very beautiful, which all of us have to remember. Swami says, "When I am giving, accept it." And there will be a time when probably I will not be obviously giving like this. Those days, recollect whatever you have experienced now and remember Swami and enjoy that moment.
This is amazing because, Prem, about an hour back, I had a talk to deliver in the satsang hall. Mm-hmm. And I spoke about Bhagwan's visit to Harshi.
Okay.
It's very interesting because I concluded the talk with what Swami told when we went to express our gratitude to Swami after the Harshi visit, mm-hmm. telling him, "Swami, we are really grateful for this opportunity." Exactly the same thing what you said now, Prem. Swami said, "See, if you are grateful, if you are truly grateful, then remember this, cherish this, because the time will come when Swami is not giving this. At that time, keep recollecting this, keep thinking this, and keep feeling this gratitude." It's so amazing because when we remember, unlike the worldly interactions and unlike things of the world, anything associated with the divine is infinite, because the divine is infinite. And it has been all our experience that when we think of what Swami has said or what Swami did or any, even a dream experience, each time we think of it, each time we ruminate over it, new meaning emerges, new light comes, and we are always thrilled. And how many ever times we do it, we don't get tired of it, because as Swami says, God is Nitya Nutana. He is ever new. The Sanatana who is also Nitya Nutana, the eternal who is ever new. And definitely this is something that we should always do.
And absolutely, and that's what Swami is probably telling these people. I understand you've enjoyed my presence here. I understand you're so thrilled about it. But there should be a way by which, you come together, you recollect these things, and you make it a perennial way by which you relive these moments. And, that is why the way Swami put it, he said, do seva, free legal counsel, free medical care. And Swami is also adding, do bhajans and study circles. You cannot be completely doing something which is benefiting others and completely neglect the spiritual aspect of your growth.
Hmm.
That's what Swami is saying, that balance. In fact, just today somebody shared one clip with me, which is very interesting. It's about an interaction between a young student and, you have these Harikatha people who give a lot of talks and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So something like a question and answer session. This 21-year-old girl is asking this Swamiji. He said, "Why should you do Abhishekam? Why should you go and pour so much milk on the lingam or something? Why not give it to the poor people outside and all of that?" And the answer which he gives is very interesting. He says, "You're 21 years old now. And let's say 50 years later, you become very old, you're very sick, they've admitted you in the hospital, right? And the doctor says that the treatment is going to cost 20 lakhs. Do you think your children will say, instead of spending 20 lakhs on a 71-year-old lady, I'll give 10 lakhs to a school which is giving free education?" That's exactly how you're saying. See, no religion tells you don't feed the poor. In fact, all religions tell you feed the poor. Mm. But that is different and this is different. This gives a different benefit and that gives a different benefit. Don't say I will cut here and give there, right? And he said, you earn 50,000 rupees per month. You will not say, instead of feeding my parents, anyway well fed, let me go and feed the beggar outside. If you want to give the beggar, you give, but you will not cut from your parents for what you're feeding for your parents. He said, one is gratitude. The other is, your kindness being expressed. And I think that's a very important thing, because people might ask, you know, why should you do bhajans instead of spending that money on the flowers that we put on the photographs? We'll go and do more seva. Of course, certainly do more seva, but that gives a different benefit and this gives a different benefit altogether.
You know, Prem, I don't know if I'm diverting from the theme, but what this brings to my mind is a very important aspect that unless we experience it, we will not be able to relate to it. And that is that bhajan, what we say is, what we may think is wasting expenditure on flowers and photo and light and all that electricity. Like in Kulwanthal, why do you put on all the chandeliers? You know, why can't we just have it dark? All these things. That is actually what is reinforcing this karma yoga part. Bhakti and karma reinforce each other. You know, it is important that we do it. Otherwise, you don't get the inspiration to do karma. Well, to counter it, you may say, you know, what about people who don't believe in God? Atheists. There are atheists who do good work. Correct. Very correct. Atheists are there who do good work. But you know what, Prem? Even those atheists, everybody, they do good work because somewhere within, they feel that good is something that has to be done. And the other is, you do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. And it's all fine as long as it adheres to these rules. Because even the atheists have based it on some theory or some concept. What do you do when this concept goes bad? In the sense that you do good and you get bad. I have known such people, Prem. People who didn't believe in Swami. I'm not saying they're atheists. But you see, when some of us, we follow Swami, it's not just that we believe in God. God is a very central and important part in our life. So in that sense, this person was not an atheist, but God was not any central part. Means it was nothing. And he was a very good person, you know, very good person doing good, every time doing good. Suddenly 20 years of such a life, after the 20 years, he struck with a health malady. His finances go awry and he's cheated by some people. And he's distraught, you know. His faith in goodness is destroyed. He says, why should I do good? Why the hell should I do good? See, you know, today we may give a theory of karma saying that different karmas take different time to happen. You should not expect a reaction as the reaction to the action that you have immediately done. All this is fine theoretically, but even we feel down when we do good and get bad in return. And when we see somebody whom we think is bad, who is seeming to be enjoying life. This is gross injustice we feel, and this makes us forget our faith in goodness itself. You know, I feel at such times, this belief in God is so vital because I'm not doing good because I'll get good. I'm doing good because it pleases my Lord. And irrespective of what happens to me in life, my God is happy, and you know what? This is a very, very powerful motivator to do good. That's why you see people losing their hand and leg and still doing good because it pleases their Lord. I feel that is where that God factor becomes so crucial, because you find a way to be at peace for yourself. Because how much ever we try with our mind, we will not be able to find a logical reason and theory to explain all the things that is happening around us. Because we will see gross injustices. At that time, I'm not saying belief in God will give you a rationale or logic, but it'll definitely give peace of mind to accept it and go ahead without ruining your own life. And at that point in time, the iron was hot and therefore I struck. I told that person that you just try doing it for God. Don't do it because even however selfless you may start, somewhere it comes in that I've done good and I will get back good. I've done good to the world will be good to me. And when it is not good to me, my faith in goodness evaporates. So, why I went into this is, that is where, you know, all this bhakti yoga comes. Bhakti yoga actually supports karma yoga. Karma yoga would collapse without bhakti yoga, and bhakti yoga is useless without karma yoga. Both are necessary, and both of them are guarded by the third aspect, which is jnana yoga, because the same day evening, Bhagwan gave a discourse to sadhakas and seekers on dhyana and jnana also.
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, when the significance of Swami talking of all of this in this particular context, you know, as in the peak of his trip, is that all of these things, Swami does not want them to do it for anything, but as an expression of the gratitude for what has already happened. And that again defines the way you do puja in this one, because I mean, going back to that conversation between that Swamiji and this person, you know, then this girl asks, do you mean that God needs it? You know, when you're talking about your parents and you're serving them. And this person says, is it that everything that you do for your parents need it? Actually, it's not that. So much of what you do for your parents is an expression of your love for what you've already received. And he said, same way, most of what you do for God is an expression of gratitude. Because you see it as, you know, in the view of some people who do it for future benefits, you think that it is a selfish act. It's not a selfish act. If it is, it should not be one. You know, you have to transform it to be an expression of gratitude.
I think this is a very, very important perspective change. It changes everything. Now, if I'm really doing everything that I do, even the goodness, as an act of gratitude towards God, then
you don't expect a payback.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than doing it as an investment, if I can do it as a token of gratitude.
Right.
Awesome.
In fact, there is a discourse which we have. Sometime we'll probably use it for something. In 1988, when Swami had called all the foreigners alone, you know, Western overseas devotees were in the ashram, Swami had called them for a session in the bhajan hall. In that, Swami had spoken about the five D's. And there, Swami was saying the first D is devotion, and Swami defines devotion as nothing but expression of gratitude. It is not doing something to please God, it is because you are pleased with God that you do something. You know, and Swami said that is what is devotion.
The entire perspective change comes, and hopefully we will be able to adopt it. And so, as I said, that evening, it was like a discourse on Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga all together. And it is not surprising that all these three were intermingled and given, because all these three are always intermingled. You cannot take up any one in isolation. And that same evening at around 8 p.m., the Minister for Internal Affairs of Uganda, Mr. Battaringay, he came and met Swami and had a long talk with him. It is very interesting to note that during this entire visit, many, many top officials, people in positions of power and influence, received attention from Bhagwan, because, you know, it seems so natural if, like how Swami would say, if one student is transformed, if one student goes bad, he gets ruined. But if one teacher goes bad, hundreds of students get ruined. In the same way, when it comes to people of influence, if they get influenced by Bhagwan's love and they're able to inculcate that love, through them, that love reaches so many more. There's a multiplier effect that happens. And that is what we were seeing. That is what we saw happening in the entire trip to East Africa. Then, after that, came the 10th of July, the D-Day, the Guru Purnima Day. And it began with a great thrill, because everybody got to know that Bhagwan had graciously agreed to stay on in East Africa and cancelled his departure to India. And so there was a great thrill even before the actual celebration started. What actually happened on the Guru Purnima Day, I think we will take up after this little break. So, dear listeners, don't go away anywhere. We will be continuing with Guru Purnima, the only Guru Purnima outside India in Bhagwan's physical presence, at Kampala on the 10th of July, 1968.
Gurura Brahma Gurura Vishnu Guru Devo Maheshwara Guru Tasmahi Shri Guruve Namah Guru Sai Maheshwara Guru Sai
Yes, it was indeed the Guru Purnima day, and Swami was not in Vrindavan, Swami was not in Prashanthi Nilayam. Swami was in Kampala in Uganda, and that was probably the only time, not probably, it was the only time physically Swami celebrated Guru Purnima outside the country, and that, I think that itself is a sign of how pleased Swami was with the trip itself, because we know, we've seen that happen many times in Kodaikanal, you know. Sometimes Swami stays for 30 days in Kodaikanal, which means Swami is in very good mood. And there are times when the very next day after reaching Kodaikanal, Swami will ask, when shall we go back? And that's a sign that you, it's really a sign of disaster. But the fact that Swami had planned to leave on Guru Purnima day after the morning darshan, but now he is continuing to stay, that itself is a sign that how happy Swami was with all the people in Uganda.
And if, as if that was not enough as a sign of his joy, what Swami did that day is simply amazing to think of, you know. More than 20 to 30,000 people had gathered there, and Swami, after granting darshan, you know, there was no public discourse. There was no public discourse on this Guru Purnima. I think whatever Swami wished to speak and convey, he had done so in the previous 3 days, right, continuously. On this day, Swami just went around the entire darshan grounds, distributing vibhuti to all those who had gathered. Amazing. And vibhuti means, naturally, padnamskar comes free with that. Because as Swami is walking through the lines distributing vibhuti, people are touching his feet. So an aspirant or a seeker or a devotee or a lover at Kampala in Africa would not have been disappointed at all, because on Guru Purnima day, each one got the opportunity to touch the lotus feet of his Bhagwan Baba and received prasadam from his guru, from the Jagat Guru, in his own divine hands. I think it was the greatest kind of blessing that they could have got on Guru Purnima, and all the people enjoyed this blessing.
And you know, Professor Kasturi writes how, seeing that scene, he was so very emotionally moved, because he saw that, you know, it was such a mixed crowd there, in the sense that there were young Africans, there were elderly ladies from both African and Indian origin. And each one responding to Swami in their own way. He said that most of these Africans were all kneeling down. You know, that's how they show their respect to a person of eminence. So they were all kneeling down and they were holding very beautiful rose bouquets. The Indian crowd, of course, the way we sit, you know,
cross-legged
with their hands folded. And even as Swami was walking past, they were taking the dust from the, you know, the places where Swami had walked on, and they were putting on their forehead. So he was saying that, you know, it was such a beautiful sight that here was Swami, and Professor Kasturi writes, the sight constantly reminded him of what Swami had said during that world conference in Mumbai. He said, every form humanity has ever worshipped has come in the form of this Satyasai. And he said he could see that, you know, that acceptance. Of course, now when we look back, we know that that was the only trip that Swami made. But I'm sure Professor Kasturi would have seen that this is going to be the beginning of a series of events that's going to come, because definitely had Swami been on a world tour, I'm sure many, many people would have been drawn the same manner. But from knowing Swami and the little which we have read about Swami, we know that Swami does not need that, right? Swami just does not need that, because even today, I mean, that it beats me even today. You look around the ashram, you see such a mix of people, you know, you still see so many foreigners with their little children in this hot summer. What makes them come here? What makes them stay here? You know, people who speak languages which you and I don't understand. I see Japanese people, I see, you know.
And the language that they don't understand anything. They don't understand Telugu, Hindi or English. Wonder how do they...
And Swami never went to their country. Swami never traveled anywhere. But all of them are here, and they are here today. And even when people are saying that, you know, what is there in Prashanthi Nilayam, these people keep coming. And I mean, it even more thrills me when I see them with their little children. You know, that must be their commitment. You know, why else? I mean, you have a child. You know that if you have to travel with your child, it really must mean something to you to make a journey. And if they're all coming here with their one-year-old kids, two-year-old kids, this place must really mean something to them. Swami must really mean something to them.
See, Prem, I just feel, you know, like there is this example that Swami gives of how radio waves are always in the air. If the radio instrument is not properly tuned, it won't get the music. That is what I feel about Prashanthi Nilayam. You know, because honestly speaking, till a few days before, March 14th to be precise, you know, I would go to the Kulwant Hall only once in a while, you know, just now and then, whenever my duty requires me to do so, because I just felt that having seen Swami, then now what, like as you said, what is there in Prashanthi Nilayam, you know, what is there now, the form is not there, so I may as well sit in my office in the studio and work. This is how I used to foolishly think, till I had to actually travel to the city of Tirupati to get my daughter's passport. And having been there for the passport, it would be wrong not to have darshan of Lord Venkateshwara there. And I was told that this is the absolutely off-season. So crowds will be non-existent almost. You can enjoy a fast darshan. And the fast darshan took me 1 hour. And if people say that that is not crowd, I just wonder what crowds must be. And it was a...
Should ask me. I waited for 12 hours in the line.
12 hours. See that. And, you know, when I went there, Prem, I had darshan and I had so many misconceptions about Tirupati, you know. They charge money for darshan, they do this, they charge money for prasadam, I don't. All that, you know. And it was a case of me having a wrong conception of the Lord because of how people around him behave. And that was an important lesson to myself, because people will often judge my Satya Sai based on how I behave. Just like I judge anybody based on people around how they behave. Because the Lord is the same pristine pure. And when I actually saw the idol, it was a magical moment, Prem. Everything dark and just that one idol lit up with lamps, and it was so beautiful for me. And that, I just felt that, I just told the Lord there that, Lord, I will be coming to Tirupati every now and then, whenever I can, I will come and see you. I felt that. And as I was coming back, you know, I almost got tears in my eyes, because I felt, is my Lord any different from the Tirupati Lord? No different. And yet, when he is here, I just don't go. I just don't go and, you know, go to the Sai Sannidhi and bow down there, or go to the bhajan hall. I don't do it because I take it for granted. Somehow, till things are given free, we don't learn the value of something. This Swami had himself shown it to the students when they were all craning their necks to look at the tail of an elephant in some Bandipur or Mudumalai forest on the way. And Swami told them that, you know, Sai Geeta is there bang opposite to your hostel. How many of you strive and crane your necks to see her? If she's there to be seen also, you are lost in your own thoughts and you walk across. And Swami said, this is what happens. When the avatar is easily available, you don't. I have heard such stories of Shirdi. You know, Shirdi, when I had gone, it was hardly any crowd. It was so easy. Today, they say you have to stand for 2 hours to have Shirdi darshan. Probably Tirupati was also like that, because on the internet, we have photographs of the Tirupati sanctum sanctorum taken and put in the early British times. So, was the Lord any different then and now? But why is there so much of clamor now? Because something is rare, we clamor for it. So, I was thinking, should I wait for my Sai to become rare, you know, to crowds to increase in Prashanthi Nilayam for it to be valuable? Just because something is available easily, does it lose its value? And you know, that hit me so hard that, that's why I said from March 14th onwards, I somehow try to make it a point that at least once a day, you know, unless there is some other inevitable thing, I definitely try to go to the mandir. And it has been a real, you know, turning point for me, that whatever happens, you have to value and cherish what we are getting. That's why, you know, now when you say that, people may wonder what is there in Prashanthi Nilayam. For Prashanthi Nilayam to, it is always radiating, like the radio station, you know. If our sets, we ourselves have got defunct and spoiled, we don't receive it. That is not the problem of Prashanthi Nilayam, that's my own problem. Because believe it or not, Prem, the last fortnight has been magical for me. Every time I go there, and especially when I go into the bhajan hall, look at that chair, think of how Swami would be sitting there. Memories come back, Prem, and I'm able to visualize, it's a different feel over there. It is the same like what I felt standing before the Sanctum Sanctorum at Tirupati. It is so special, and I felt so foolish thinking, how on earth have I been missing this special feeling all these days because of my own stupid preconceived notions? So I feel it is about we changing our perspective. If we are ready to tweak it a little bit, we will understand why Prashanthi Nilayam continues to attract people who get their own children and kids and everybody in this hot cooking summer when there is no recreational facilities around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that also is really a sign of And Swami reaching out to all of these people, I mean, otherwise, how will they even come? You know, how will they even know that here is a place where, I mean, it's a spiritual oasis or whatever it is, the way they look at it. But, you know, when we are talking about the trip, we are seeing that so easily Swami was attracting all of these people. And many of them might not have come back to Swami. You know, many of these Africans, probably they wouldn't have had the means to travel back. And as we all know, you know, even the good things fade away from our memory. Even the best of things fade away from our memory. We know so many devotees who have come to Swami, they will say that, oh, we came in the 60s, we came in the 70s, but I never came back after that. And, you know, there are people who come now, they're saying that, no, we had Swami Darshan, you know, when Swami came to Punjab in the 70s, but we never saw Swami after that. But even the best thing in life, which is Swami's Darshan, can fade away from your memory, right? And that is probably one more reason why Swami was insisting that do seva, do bhajans, participate in study circles, because what has been received has to be stored. Like, it's like, I mean, going back to the radio waves example, it's like sunlight. You know, another example you can think of is sunlight. If you want to harness that solar energy, you need cells to store them, right? Otherwise, the sun comes and goes every day and you don't give value to them. So all of this, and Swami's gesture of celebrating Guru Purnima there was, I mean, an added grace for them. You know, I'm giving more to you, more and more to you. I'm giving more of myself to you. Don't stop with just adoring me right now here in front of you. Because that, I think, I mean, Swami is in that sense that purest being, but even the person who has no feeling towards Swami, when they come in front of Swami, they would feel like putting their hands together. They would probably even have a feeling of warmth within. But it is up to us to foster that. And Swami was giving an opportunity to this African city of Kampala, and what an enormous, overwhelming opportunity they were getting.
Absolutely. And as you said, it is up to us to foster it. And we have seen many times that those who make efforts to foster it are always given that extra grace by Bhagwan. See, for example, in Africa also, in Kampala, as they got to know Swami's leaving, delegations came from everywhere. As right. Kasturi Garu records, African students from the University of Makerere, they came. There were delegations from Kabale, from Kakira, from Igaya, from Masaka.
I mean, some of these districts were as far as 400 kilometers away. I mean, I was just looking up in the internet. They're coming from really far places.
So they are coming. They are coming, but though Swami is blessing them and talking to them and all that, Swami seemed to have a special corner to one group. Imagine on the Guru Purnima day, when there are thousands and thousands waiting, Swami finds time to specially speak to 200 volunteers and policemen who were engaged in being the Sevadal there. You know, there was no concept of Sevadal in East Africa at that point in time. So all the volunteers, all the work, everything where Swami goes to ensure discipline, they are giving up their own darshan, their own chance to do bhajan in order to ensure discipline there, in order to ensure things go smoothly, feeding people. All this, no? All this work were taken up by these 200 volunteers, and Swami gave his Guru Purnima discourse to these 200, as Kasturi Garu records. There was no public discourse. But that's why I say, all of us, even a stone feels something special when we come in the presence of the avatar. So there's nothing special in me saying the first time I saw Swami, I felt amazing. Because that is what happens when you come in the avatar's presence. But when I build on that and ensure that that translates into something that is eternal and continuous, that is what the Lord appreciates. And Swami was appreciating. In fact, Kasturi Garu records that Swami said to these people that even after I leave physically, you must carry out the services that you have done so long. And then Swami said, don't stop with that. Train yourself to do the same better. Realizing that God is within you, and through serving the same God who is within you, I mean, serving the same God who is within all others, irrespective of color, caste, creed or race. In fact, Swami told them that very soon centers of training and service will arise. Make use of all these opportunities. It's very interesting because the previous day Swami has given guidance on how to go about in the organizational setup. Here he is coming and telling, because no organizational setup is useful if there are no people. As Swami would say, Deshamante matti kadu, Deshamante manushuloi. A country is not the soil and sand, but the people of the country. In the same way, an organization is not buildings and office structure, but the people. So yesterday Swami was building up the organization structure, and here Swami was telling these people, giving them special attention, telling that I am very, very happy with what you have done for the last so many days when I am here, but please don't stop with this, continue on like this. It was almost like Swami was telling them that you are my chosen army and I am very, very happy with you.
And you know, Professor Kasturi also notes that when Swami came back to Mumbai, on the 15th of July, they had a reception for Swami after he got back. And on that occasion, Swami spoke highly of these volunteers and reprimanded the volunteers in Bombay, saying that you've been doing this for so many years, but you're not really up to it. You should learn from the volunteers in Uganda because they did such a fine job. And I mean, that again is, we all have that drive and that passion when we're doing it for the first time. I mean, nothing to take away from the volunteers of Uganda. I'm sure they won Swami's heart. You know, who are we to judge them? But looking at it from our point of view, we always have this problem of starting out with that complete josh and all of that, but it
fizzles out.
And that is where we always lose out, and that's what we have to be conscious of.
There is this saying that goes that familiarity breeds contempt. In Swami's case, probably not contempt, but familiarity definitely breeds neglect in us. Because that is what I have realized personally many times. Even when I spoke about this mandir, that's all it is. Why possibly I am not treasuring the mandir is because I am familiar with it. I can walk in any time, this is what I feel. But I don't realize that it's a blessing. And the moment I realize that it's a blessing, it makes a world of difference in my life. I think that is what we should, as you rightly said, we should sustain and persevere with what we have started and not have josh only in the first time. Late in that evening on the Guru Purnima day, there was another very, very important message that Swami delivered, and this was a talk to the family members of C.G. Patel, Dr. C.G. Patel, the instrument who was responsible for this entire visit. And there, in trying to sum up what Swami said there, we can pick one sentence from that discourse where Swami said, two flints are needed to create a fire. One flintstone is people. The other flintstone is hardship. Swami said that prosperity deadens the intellect, while it is failure which prompts inquiry and the struggle to remove hardships forever. So, Swami, I think this is so beautiful and so very, very important. Because I remember, on one occasion, I got the opportunity to speak to people from Odisha, the state of Odisha. It is economically impoverished, but it's spiritually a very rich state. One person got up and asked this question, as to why is it that people who love God, that what had actually happened was, I went there with a speech prepared, but when I saw the love that people have for Swami, I felt I was overwhelmed, Prem, and my talk totally changed. Instead of being a talk on how one should become dear to God, the talk entirely became on how much I admire you people, how much God loves you all, that is very evident in the atmosphere here itself. So after the talk, they said that, why is it that, who are very dear to the Lord, they seem to be having the most economical difficulties, financial problems, health difficulties, why is it like that? That really set me thinking, and here is Swami giving the answer. Swami is giving the answer because the greatest goal in our life, reaching God, will not get ignited in us in times of prosperity. As Swami says, prosperity deadens the intellect. It is failure that prompts inquiry and that intense struggle to remove hardships forever, not temporary relief. I don't want to have symptomatic relief or temporary relief. I want a permanent cure and permanent bliss. And that comes only through hardships. And now it seems so natural that people who love God are given temporary hardships so that they reach a level where no hardship in any world can ever touch them in life. So Swami gave a lot of emphasis on hardship. I mean, it's very amazing because Africa is possibly one continent that has borne a lot of hardship. And to them, Swami is encouraging them, telling them, don't push away hardship, welcome hardship and welcome it as a means to reach your ultimate goal, which is me.
We always see that, even when we look at the performance of our cricket team, we always see that. I mean, any time when there is a victory, especially if there's a thrilling win, we completely overlook all the flaws which were there in the performance in that match. But it's only when there is a defeat, you know, when you had a very bad series, you've been, you know, trounced and you come back, that's when you start looking at, okay, these are the departments which we did badly, these are things. I mean, you seriously start looking at what are the flaws that you do. And that's why Swami would often say, you know, it's only the problems which are teachers. Prosperity is only going to make you,
Nasukhat labhyate sukham.
Right, laxidical in your approach to life. And that's what happens. And that is why it's not like you go and embrace problems in life. That I think we are instinctively made to avoid problems, right? But the least that we can do is when problems come, don't run away from them or don't start cursing your fate or anything like that. By nature we'll try to avoid problems, by nature we'll be going after happiness. But when these problems come, Swami says, can you look at them as examinations that you have to take for the progress in this school of life?
And in order to help you while taking the exams, in that same talk with the Patel family, Swami said, the most effective tool is Namasmarana. Keep chanting the Lord's name. It will help you. It will also purify you. And at that point in time, somebody asked whether Swami recommends the use of the Japamala. Swami said that if you feel it is helping you in focusing on the Lord, okay. But if it's for keeping a count, Swami said, why do you need Japamala to count? Why do you want to count how many times you took the Lord's name? Just keep taking the Lord's name. It's best to avoid it if it serves no other purpose other than helping you to focus. So these were other tips that Swami gave on the Guru Purnima night. Wonderful indeed that Swami is giving such beautiful things on Guru Purnima night. In fact, I was just thinking, any day with Guru is Guru Purnima. Any day when we are with Swami, any day when we listen to Swami is Guru Purnima, because the Guru is the same and it is only our mind, you know. Mind is often related to the moon. Chandrama manaso jataha. So it is only our mind, when it becomes full, that we will be able to enjoy the true essence of Guru Purnima. So that was how the beautiful Guru Purnima concluded in Kampala. But what something else had happened on Guru Purnima, which everybody, including Kasturi, got to know only on the 11th, the next day. But I think before we go to the 11th of July, what happened there in Kampala, we'll take another quick break and come back after that.
मानस भजवे गुरु चरणम दुष्कर भव सागर तरणम
मानस भजवे गुरु चरणम दुष्कर भव सागर तरणम
मानस भजवे गुरु चरणम दुष्कर भव सागर तरणम गुरु महाराज गुरु जय जय
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 सारी नाथ सतु जय जय
सारी नाथ सतु जय जय
ओम नमः शिवाय ओम नमः शिवाय ओम नमः शिवाय शिवाय नमः
ओम नमः शिवाय ओम नमः शिवाय ओम नमः शिवाय शिवाय नमः
अरुणाचल शिव अरुणाचल शिव अरुणाचल शिव अरुण शिव
अरुणाचल शिव अरुणाचल शिव अरुणाचल शिव अरुण शिव
ओंकारम बाबा ओंकारम बाबा ओम नमो बाबा
ओंकारम बाबा ओंकारम बाबा ओंकारम बाबा ओम नमो बाबा
मानस भजवे गुरु चरण
Welcome back, dear listeners. The Guru Purnima has just concluded in Kampala. And on the 11th of July, again, the huge devotee rush at Kampala at the residence of Dr. C.G. Patel, because this was a thrilling moment for them when they realized, you know, it took some time for the news to percolate that Swami is not leaving for India and Swami is there. So many who thought that they had missed the opportunity all came thronging. And so there was a record crowd for morning bhajan that day. And that's how Kasturi Garu puts it. He says that there was a record crowd for morning bhajan. There was also a record number of interviews that Swami granted. And a very interesting thing, and that is a teaser that we left before, that is a teaser that we kept before we went to the break. There was something of interest that many people reported. The previous day, as we said, Swami had distributed vibhuti packets, vibhuti to all the people who had come on Guru Purnima day. And the next day, many devotees came back relating how that they had found photos, talismans, etc. inside the vibhuti packets that they had received the previous day. So it was a very amazing thing, and each one, many of them were different, many of them were tailor-made for the devotee. So it was a thrilling thing, and it was not as if everybody received also. So it was, I think, a mass conferring of grace, because waving his hand and creating a talisman or a photo, possibly Swami would not have been physically been able to do it in that short period of time. So instead he resorted to this mass materialization miracle, where he just distributed vibhuti packets, and each person who needed whatever, whether it was a photograph or a talisman or a pendant or whatever, it appeared to each of them in their vibhuti packet, and many of them came and reported this to Kasturi, and that is how he has recorded it in the article that he wrote about this visit.
And one of the other things which Professor Kasturi specifically notes is what an interview which Swami had given to one of the doctors who had visited. And Swami spoke to, you know, the doctor's helper, or what we would call in India as Aya. You know, he writes that.
A maid
servant or a female help when a doctor is attending to a patient. And she was a local woman, a local African lady. And the doctor was shocked, because I'm sure even the doctor might not be able to do that, because Swami spoke to this maid in Swahili, her native language, which is an African language. And he comes and describes that event to the people outside, how Swami spoke to that lady in Swahili.
So in this manner, Swami blessed so many devotees with interviews, and whatever few that people came and reported to Kasturi, and among those, whatever few Kasturi chose to write as an article or in the story, we know of. So I'm sure for every story and every experience that we are narrating, we are missing out on hundreds of others. But that is how it is. Hari Anant, Hari Katha Anant. The Lord is infinite. His glories and stories are also infinite. That evening on the 11th of July, Swami visited Dr. Patel's clinic in the city, and there, you know, Swami blessed all the compounders and attendants and everybody who were associated with his medical practice. So, Dr. Patel had a surgery to perform, you know, even in the middle of this visit. I think probably he would have scheduled it, because he would have thought that Swami is leaving on the 10th.
Right.
Yeah. And so this must have been an important surgery. He wouldn't have been able to cancel it. It turned out to be a blessing for that patient, because Swami went and blessed the surgery. And early evening, that is what happened. And later in the evening, Swami visited multiple devotees' homes, and though this was supposed to be a top secret, I think word got around, and everywhere that Swami went, there were huge crowds thronging to get a glimpse of him, a word from him, a touch from him, whatever. So that was how the evening was spent on the 11th of July.
You know, every page of these descriptions that you read, it really thrills you, you know, how what it would have been to see Swami in those environs, because we all have seen Swami in Parthi, we've all seen Swami in Vrindavan, but it was a different thing to see Swami visiting some place, right? Swami going to Mumbai, or Swami going to Delhi, Hadchi or Chennai or all of these places, because it was a different thing, because a lot of people who probably did not have the initiative to make the trip to Prashantinilayam all the way, you know, they would see Swami, and you are seeing Swami being seen by so many people who would not have seen Swami otherwise. It's a completely different environment, and the way Swami interacts with all of them is also a thrill. You know, here you see that Swami is going to these various towns, various people, and all of these, you know, when Swami is interacting with the workers in the clinic of Dr. Patel, or speaking to the devotees who are coming, who would have been coming with their servants, right? And they all would have been coming with their drivers, you know, with their servants. Swami interacting to all of, with all of them. It's such a beautiful thing and to recollect that incident of Swami spending all these days. And it also, you know, it makes me wonder what would be running in Mother Isharamma's mind sitting in Bombay, right?
Oh, first Swami of all,
right? First of all, she has sent Swami so reluctantly and saying, you know, there are man-eaters there are wild animals there, and here is Swami not returned. What has happened there? Right, you know, but of course, as we've heard from an account of a devotee who is staying with Swami or staying with Mother Isharamma, or rather Mother Isharamma was staying in the house.
You said right, Rani Java.
Rani Java. She would narrate how every opportunity that Swami got, Swami actually called Bombay to their house to speak to Mother Isharamma and to reassure her that he is fine and he is having a good time, right? More importantly. And like she says later, from that act of Swami, she learnt how that she needs to call up her parents, you know, because she spent a lot of time in Vrindavan staying with Swami. She would ensure that she calls up her mother and father and speaks very
well. Isharamma's mother and father?
No. She would call
Rani
up
Java,
her,
Rani right, Java. Okay.
Which is not a habit in their family. The other daughters and sons would not do that.
Okay.
But she would do that because she saw that Swami would do that to Mother Isharamma.
I just wish that we could have the audio recording between Swami and Isharamma, what they might have spoken.
Right.
Isharamma also, you know, I remember a talk that Sanjay Sani sir had given in Vrindavan, where he asked a rhetorical question as to, did Isharamma mother Sai or did Sai mother Isharamma? Isharamma would have had this dual role to play, because this is her son, but this is the avatar of the age. And I wonder what the conversation would have been like. She must have picked the phone and said, what happened? Why have you not come? Where are you? What is happening? And I don't know. You can only imagine. That's why I say I just wish wistfully that if we had a recording. Anyway, now that Swami was staying, I think Dr. C.G. Patel quickly organized another visit to another kind of game reserve in Africa. The African continent, you know, if you just scroll through, you will see that it's a continuum of one national park after another, one game reserve after another. It's like that, so beautiful, untouched by man's savagery and modernization, and you just hope that, you know, it remains like that, because it is a last bastion, last hope for so many wild flora and fauna. So they had made plans to take Swami to the reserve, the Murchison Falls National Park. There is a Murchison Waterfalls, which I think is formed by the River Nile before it surges on ahead. It's a very magnificent waterfall, and the area surrounding this waterfall is a game reserve, is a national park, and therefore it has been named as Murchison Falls National Park. It's about 190 miles from Kampala. That's almost like about 320 kilometers. And the plan was to take Bhagwan there. And therefore, early in the morning at around 6:30, all were ready. They had to leave the entourage. That was when one of the members of the entourage got sick, and he would not be able to travel. But when Swami came to know of it, he called him, immediately materialized Vibhuti. And in no time, as Kasturi records, he was into his bubbling, energetic self, and the amount of work he did during this visit to Murchison Falls National Park, nobody would have believed that he was sick in the morning. But that's how it began. And at 6:30 in the morning, all the three cars headed towards Murchison Falls National Park.
And that was not the only obstacle they faced, because as you said, three cars on that entourage, one broke down pretty close to Kampala, actually. They say about, I think, somewhere in a town which was not more than 50 miles away. Even there, the car broke down, and Swami was giving a running commentary that the car is broken down.
Prem, I feel you're putting it mildly when you say it broke down.
Okay.
As Kasturi Garu records, it was a major accident, you know.
No, actually, that is how it is. I mean, that is how it has been recorded by Kasturi in the book that he wrote. But in Loving God, he writes clearly what exactly happened.
Right? Yes, he writes that the car was zooming ahead because Swami's car zoomed off. Somehow, you know, I don't know how it is that the nature, society, everybody seems to give way for Swami. Somehow Swami's car zooms ahead. You know, I can say this even from a little practical experience where when Swami had been to Delhi, all of Swami's entourage was also given cars which are as good as Swami's car in terms of their engine and performance, you know. And all the cars were given Z-level security clearance or whatever to travel within Delhi. But in spite of all that, Swami would always reach 10-15 minutes earlier than the rest. I just wonder how is it possible. And reading this, it just assures me that it is not the case only in the modern times. Since times immemorial, Swami's car seems to be having a greater speed. And that's what happened. Swami's car zoomed off and the other two cars were trying to catch up. The second car was the car in which Kasturi is there. In their speed and eagerness to catch up, the driver missed seeing one bend. And when he tried to negotiate it, the car just went into somersaults. It did multiple somersaults, and as Kasturi Garu records, he says the cushion from the seat came out and it was resting between my head and the crushed ceiling of the car. And I was sitting on the chest of my colleague there with blood from my forehead trickling onto his chest. You know, it was a complete topsy-turvy accident. And this happened very close to Kampala itself. And even as this happened, Swami was giving a running commentary of how this car has upturned, an accident has happened. People have been hurt, but it's not very serious, nothing to worry about. And the big town there is a town called, big city there is a town called, a city called Masindi. I hope that's the way to pronounce it, M-A-S-I-N-D-I. And Swami reached there, and from Masindi they had to proceed ahead to Murchison Falls National Park. It's very close by. Swami even gave the running commentary that at Masindi they have hired a new car, because what happened there was when the second car had an accident, the third car came and somehow fitted in all the occupants into the third car, and they all of them crammed into this third car till they reached Masindi, from where they hired another car. So all this running commentary Swami gives. And though Kasturi Garu doesn't record, Dr. Gadia in his book Sai Smaran, he records how when this entourage reached near Swami, first thing that Swami did was he called Kasturi and he materialized Vibhuti for him. In fact, we have got a few photographs of the African visit where we can see Kasturi with this bandage tied on his head. So it was not just the morning fever of one person in the entourage that Swami cured. It was also relief, medical relief that was given to Kasturi when he had this accident. And he was apparently the most affected. The others escaped with minor scratches. So this is an interesting episode that happened on the way to the Murchison Falls National Park.
That's the interesting thing. You know, many people curse their fate when they have an accident, and they say that, oh, and especially if you're going on a pilgrimage and you have an accident, that's it. You know, you completely blame God. But here is an entourage which is driving with Swami and they have an accident. And, you know, that's a beautiful lesson in itself, because once I remember this conversation between Anil Kumar sir and Swami, when he was protesting and he's saying, Swami, why are you not curing yourself? Why are you not getting up from this chair and walking? Why are you doing all this? And one thing that Swami said was very profound. He said, do I cure every person who comes to me? Do I heal every person who comes with an ailment? When that is the case, how can I cure myself? You know, Swami is saying that when I tell people that you have to take what comes to your life with equanimity, how can I not do that, right? And many times, in fact, I was talking to one of our friends a couple of days back, and he was narrating an incident which happened during the construction of the Anantapur College, right? In 1968, just after Swami's trip, you know, he came back and
got fully involved
in the construction of the Anantapur College. And that's the beauty of Swami. Imagine Swami has made this trip. You have the president and the prime minister and the external affairs minister and whosoever of Uganda coming and meeting Swami. But it seems when Swami was beginning the construction, there was not a huge lot of funds to, you know, go about the construction as Swami would have wanted it, right? They would really had to plan the way they were going about the construction, because there was a paucity of funds, because Swami would not take from anybody and everybody, right? So with great amount of difficulty, they put up a little bit of money and they wanted to buy the first consignment of cement, which was coming. And this was coming all the way from, I think, Kakinada or some place like that. And they were waiting for this thing to come, and all of these devotees were involved in the construction. They were waiting near the site in Anantapur, thinking that once this consignment comes, they will start their, the construction work. And Swami was also in Anantapur waiting for this truck to come. So they were waiting and waiting, and this truck driver would give calls from different towns saying that we've reached here and all that. And then after a couple of days, there were no calls from this driver, right? So one day Swami came, and Swami was laughing. He came to all these devotees, and Swami called all of them and said, all of you go back home. I will call you later. We'll come and resume the construction or whatever it is. And he was sending all of them, and he was not able to resist his laughter. Literally, Swami was holding his stomach and laughing. Then finally, Swami told one devotee. That devotee asked Swami, Swami, what happened to the lorry with the cement? And Swami was giggling and saying, you know what? And the driver and the cleaner have taken the truck somewhere. They've sold the cement and they've run away. And this devotee is thinking, Swami, sitting here, you know what is happening. Why are you not stopping it? But Swami was just laughing it off, in spite of the fact that they had, with a lot of struggle, put up that money to buy that consignment of cement. Swami is saying, that's what it is. What has to happen will happen. You have to take it with a smile. And it is the case even if it is happening to the avatar. Right? And that was how Swami was actually teaching a lesson. And that's precisely what, I mean, if Swami can give a running commentary of what is happening 70, 80 miles behind, Swami very well knew that was what was going to happen even at 6:30 a.m. when they started off on the journey, right?
See, this is very important for us to remember, at least for some of us in the present context, because we seem to be getting affected by things happening around the world in general and the Sai organization in specific, certain members of Sai organization doing something, and we get worried and say, Swami knows and how is he allowing all this? I think at that point in time we should remember this Anantapur cement truck story and know that Swami is smiling. All we can do is we can also join him and smile, just knowing that we are on Swami's side, just ensuring that we are on Swami's side. I think that's all we need to do.
And if you want to be on Swami's side, you have to laugh along with him. You can't complain.
Yes, absolutely. So that is what happened. And at Masindi they had taken the other car and they reached the national park there. And one of the first things that they observed is a big board which said, elephants have right of way. Which probably meant that you will be encountering a lot of elephants even on the roads meant for cars. So that exactly happened. Even as they were driving towards the lodge where they have to go, a lot of elephants, they come and they're standing there with their gentle faces, ears flapping by and not ruffled by a thing in the world. In fact, Kasturi writes that seeing this, he felt that these are not wild animals. These are like tame animals. These are like cows in our barn. But he was reminded that, reality and appearance don't match. The reality is something else. You better keep your distance from them, because we all know what happens when an elephant gets upset. So that was the case. In order to reach their Para Safari Lodge, that is the place, P-A-R-A-A Safari Lodge, it's existent even today. Mm-hmm. It's amazing, right? 50 years after that day, that lodge still exists. So they had to go to the Para Safari Lodge, which was across the Nile. And so therefore, there were motor launches. And the interesting thing is, it was not as if people got down and got into the motorboat. The entire cars themselves drove onto the launch, and the cars themselves were transported to the other side of the Nile. From there, they drove on and reached the Para Safari Lodge, where Swami was there like a loving mother welcoming them. That is where Kasturi was also petted and fondled and given a lot of love by Swami, because he had got injured and he was given his vibhuti, he was given his consolation. And this was a time of happy reunion of all the members of the entourage with Bhagwan.
And I think after that, the sightseeing after that was in the form of a boat ride. They went on a motor boat and they spent about 3 hours motoring along the Nile. And it's really, I was just telling you some time back, it's fascinating, this river Nile, from where to where it flows. And Egypt is at least 3 countries higher up in the African continent, and we know that we always associate Nile with Egypt,
pyramids,
and this is almost Eastern Africa, which is almost
middle of Africa.
And that's how far this Nile comes, and it's the Nile which actually creates this waterfall which they're going to visit.
I think, Africa is possibly the only continent where you have inland freshwater seas. Technically they're called lakes.
Lakes.
But There is no way, no.
As big as the Caspian.
Yeah, exactly. Just that there are freshwater lakes. So, for example, Lake Victoria, we already spoke about how it spans four countries along its borders. Now, even this boat ride that you are speaking about, Prem, if we travel from, if we travel northwards, this Murchison Falls National Park is to the northwest of Kampala.
Mm-hmm.
Quite northwest, 300 odd kilometers. So once you reach Murchison Falls National Park, now there are two parts of the river. One is the river before the falls, one is the river after the falls. So first what happened is this boat ride happened in the river that is after the falls. So the idea is from this Para Safari Lodge in motor vehicles, they drove downstream. A good 40-50 kilometers they drive downstream and reach a lake called Albert Lake. Mm-hmm. Now again, Albert Lake is a misnomer, the word. It's another inland sea because half of the lake belongs to Uganda. The other half belongs to, Congo. Congo. Okay. The other half belongs to the country that's above, you know. It's such a huge lake. So from Albert Lake, you ride upstream in the River Nile. Against the tide, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you ride for about 20-25 miles and you reach almost near the place where the waterfall is actually ending. So that is an unique experience because all along this, once the waterfall is completed, all along the river, there are thousands of hippos and crocodiles, and that is the famous footage that we have seen of Swami standing in the boat through binoculars watching hippos and crocodiles.
Hippo schools, he says that it's the lake was filled with hippo schools because not one or two in hundreds, but you can't see all of them because they're all submerged underwater and only their eyes and ears popping out, and you could see hundreds of eyes and ears, you know, along the shallow part of the river.
Mm.
And that's the sight which they have. And as you say, in that beautiful footage of Swami standing on that raft, like in part of the motorboat, and seeing all of these animals. And of course, apart from hippos, the other creature which was seen in plenty were the crocodiles, right?
In fact, you know, the number of crocodiles, because they are like frozen stiff like rocks, you are not able to estimate. And when Kasturi actually was able to see the number of crocodiles there, he says that he was reminded of a piece of literature that Winston Churchill had written,
mm-hmm.
where he says that, you know, he went shooting a crocodile and he spotted the crocodile and he wanted to shoot the crocodile. When he shot it, he says that the bullet simply touched the thick armor of the crocodile and the crocodile rushed to escape into the water. But the gunshot, he says, when hearing the gunshot, the whole area came alive and he could see thousands of reptiles, saurians as he calls them, rushing towards the river. And that is the kind of sight that even Kasturi saw, though they did not shoot, possibly the sound of the motorboat or whatever. He saw that the land was teeming with crocodiles, and these crocodiles and hippos were living very comfortably in each other's presence. You know, they are so opposite in their lifestyle, and yet they're living so comfortably in their presence. And this entire motorboat launch, you know, like from Lake Albert, they move eastwards towards the waterfall. And once they reach near the waterfall, which is about 25 kilometers away, they take a U-turn and come back to Albert Lake, descend, get back in their vehicles and drive back to Para Safari Lodge. So this took about 3 hours and it was an amazing sight for all of them. And of course, to see Swami enjoying nature, it was beautiful. They reach back Para Safari Lodge and then they set out in their vehicles, driving down now to the upper half of the river. You know, that is the river before the waterfall.
Okay.
It is from there that you will be able to see the waterfall. So once again, they had to cross the river in the motor launches. They crossed and then drove down to the actual Murchison waterfalls.
And that's where they come across this. I think, is that where they see an elephant which comes and, you know, literally the elephant gives them a darshan.
Exactly.
You know, stands there and, a lone elephant which comes, stands there
a male,
allows them to see it in all its glory, literally standing there and, you know, allowing them to look at it from all directions, peacefully giving them a good sight and then walks away.
In fact, Kasturi Garu records that this one apparently came out of the herd.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of matter is male elephants don't stay in the herd. The herd is made up of only females and young males who have not yet hit puberty. Once they hit puberty, the males are driven away. So it is a solitary male only. But it was near the herd of the elephant. Possibly it was looking for mates or whatever. But this elephant, while it gave darshan to all the members of the entourage, Kasturi Garu records that Swami decided to give darshan to the elephant because he stood on the footboard of the vehicle and kept looking at the elephant looking at Swami, Swami at the elephant, and a few minutes elapsed like this, and then the elephant walked away and then they drove on. And another thing, I think the writer in Kasturi came to the fore because some of these elephants were amidst papyrus reeds. Mm-hmm. And papyrus reeds, these are the reeds that are that were first used by the Egyptian civilization to make paper. So he was very thrilled to see that, and finally they reached the Murchison Falls, and oh my god, Prem, you know, one has to just go and search for this video on YouTube. Watch the Murchison Falls. You know, Murchison Falls is like an S-shaped falls that is descending down a spiral kind of. It's like the entire river, you know, the Victoria Nile it is called. The Victoria Nile is squeezed into a narrow a narrow opening between two big peaks like thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that opening spirals downwards in a shape of an S. So just imagine opening the tap with a water hose in full force and then squeezing the tip of the hose. How it shoots out like a jet, that's precisely what happens on a huge scale. 1 million cubic meters per second.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a jet of water that size gushing, and there's a spray, there's a foam, and Kasturi Garu writes that you stand at a distance of 100 meters away, the foam still comes and hits you, the spray hits you. That is the force with which the Murchison Falls, the river descends there. And he says that multiple birds of prey, kingfishers and so many unknown, unseen before. He definitely, Kasturi would not have seen such kind of birds. They're all there because there's enough to feed everyone in that falls there. And that is where they stood and enjoyed the beauty of the falls. In fact, Bob Raymer, whom we spoke about, you know, he had sent that message to Swami. He had a camera and he has captured some unforgettable photographs of Bhagwan at the Murchison waterfalls.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have not seen the footage of the Murchison Falls, but it always reminds me of that iconic picture of Swami standing there in that golden yellow robe, literally, and with his, you know, his head resting on his palm and Swami's elbow resting on the railing, I think, beyond the point where you're not supposed to go. There's even the board which says that don't go beyond this point, it's dangerous or something.
And throughout they have put a railing.
Right.
And this railing can be seen even in Google Earth images.
Okay, and that's where Swami is leaning, and you can see this lush green, you know, hill with that fall in the background. It's a very, very beautiful, iconic picture. And I'm sure, you know, that would have been really, what a sight it would have been, you know, Swami standing amidst that. And every time I see that, the only thing which comes to my mind is the artist with his canvas, with the art behind him. You know, that's literally,
wow,
that's how he would have felt. You know, Swami is there and he's the one who's created that beauty which really takes your breath away. And Swami is standing there and posing for that picture. Amazing, really.
So, with that beautiful scene in our mind, Swami smiling, his thick mop of black hair being blown like clouds in the sky, a cool breeze, a spray of fresh water, nature at her best. And, you know, in this, I think it's best that we conclude on this beautiful natural note, because some more things happened on the 12th of July, but possibly we will postpone it for the next satsang. We will stop with this beautiful scene at Murchison Falls. How Swami returned from Murchison Falls to Kampala is another beautiful story. But as I said, we will take that up in the next satsang. Dear listeners, we hope that you're enjoying the sojourn as much as we are, traveling with Swami, seeing the scenes, seeing the sights, enjoying the sights, enjoying nature and the Lord, enjoying Prakriti and the Paramatma. Any feedback, any suggestions, any thoughts, any feelings, any incidents, anything related to the African visit or not even to the African visit, you can definitely write to us at listener@radiosai.org. We will now leave you with a bhajan, on the other side of which will be the segment Love to Love. So with this, we will come to the conclusion of the African visit fortnight. The next fortnight, in the afternoon satsang segment, we will be taking up the Bhagavata Vahini. A fortnight after that, we will continue from the Murchison Falls. So keep tuning in and see you again next week at the same time. Thank you. Jai Sairam.
Shri Ramam.